Today is July 15th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, you can visit the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. It's always a party when the tech web gets to talk politics. I've got the margarita mix. The pool's open. Let's dive right in. The U.S. House of Representatives approved a bill designed to restrict online poker and other internet-based gambling on Tuesday. The bill was approved with a 317-93 vote. The bill aims to restrict online gambling by prohibiting the use of electronic payments, including credit cards. Backers say the bill will help curb money laundering and other criminal activities. Web-based poker and betting sites, they claim, are often based overseas and used as a front by drug dealers and terrorists to move money. There's also concern that such services prey on children and gambling addicts. Opponents claim that the bill would be difficult to enforce and goes beyond reasonable control. The Poker Players Alliance, for example, recommended that the government regulate and tax online poker and betting instead of banning it. This bill has a long history of controversy in the past. For example, disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff, about whom you may have heard in the news, worked to block similar legislation. It's also worth pointing out that this bill does provide carve-outs, as they're called, to protect institutionalized gambling practices such as horse racing and sports betting. CD sales may be dropping, but music download sales are on a sharp rise this year. Legal U.S. music downloads jumped 77% in the first half of 2006. 14 million full album downloads were purchased compared to 6.5 million for the same period last year, but consumers still prefer purchasing songs individually. By contrast with digital downloadings gains, CD sales have dropped 4.2% in the first half of 2006. One other thing before we get into the poker regulation shtick. Apple and Amazon are both negotiating with movie studios in an effort to strike deals to allow consumers to download full-length films. Both companies are being secretive about their negotiations. Movie downloads are seen as the next phase in the multimedia download market, and Apple and Amazon both want to be on the leading edge in that arena. Movie studios, however, don't seem to be as willing to deal as music and TV executives were. Well, maybe that's because the movie industry isn't crumbling. DVDs and pay television make up a big part of movie returns, and studios don't want to risk losing that revenue. The threat of movie piracy also raises concerns. Movie studios apparently are willing to negotiate, but aren't sure how to structure pricing. Some executives think movie downloads should cost less than their DVD counterparts, and some think that pricing should be the same. All right, so joining me right now for the Context Machine, editor of TMO and IPO, the iPod Observer, Brian Chaffin. Woo-hoo. How you doing?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I am well. I just I had a cup of coffee, so I am jazzed. This is going to be a big interview.
Excellent.
I'm very excited about this. Poker ban, internet gambling, U.S. House, the 60-second or less version of your opinion on this bill?
That the Republican Party has completely lost sight of reality. That's the 5-6 second version of it. This bill really is no more than pandering to the religious right, trying to vaguely stop something that they A, shouldn't be stopping in the first place, and B, have no business trying to stop even if they want to. It will do no good. It has exemptions for other forms of online gambling that basically cater to the existing brick and mortar market. And I mean, it's a hypocritical piece of legislation. It will achieve little to nothing, and is really only intended as a wedge issue for the upcoming midterm elections.
Now I'm going to play the Fox News anchor right now. How could you possibly object to protecting children and gambling addicts?
Because this bill does not protect children and gambling addicts. And more specifically, it tries to do so by stopping other ordinary Americans, the vast majority of ordinary Americans, who actually enjoy doing this activity that is sanctioned in other kinds of ways. It's that is a red herring argument to throw at this concept.
And now how about this? A lot of the fact is a lot of these organizations, they're held overseas. They're controlled by people who would like to do the United States harm, terror organizations, drug lords who use these organizations to launder money. Shouldn't we make some effort to prevent them from taking Americans' money?
Well, absolutely. And we should do so by legalizing this in the United States. Specifically, and there's another adjective that's escaping me right now, but very specifically legalizing it and regulating it and taxing it. The reason why gambling sites are located overseas is because the both the Bush administration and to a substantially lesser extent, but definitely still the Clinton administration, did their best to chase them overseas. And that is the fault here. We need to it has cost the American economy billions of dollars in lost tax revenue by not having supported and regulated this industry in the very first place. Okay. So if we could actually bring these companies back to the states or legislate how they do business in the states, the government could actually collect billions of dollars in taxes, both the state and local level.
Now, let me back down a second and ask you the following question. Why would anyone think this bill is a good idea?
Well, because there's a tiny segment in this country that feels really empowered now, the religious right, who wants to basically force all Americans to adhere to their view of how to live life. You also have a lot of brick and mortar casinos that were supporting this bill because they want to keep people coming into their doors instead of being able to gamble online. And you know, let's be clear. In my opinion, there is a world difference between online poker and doing something like betting on horses or sports bets and things like that, or playing, you know, the various table games like blackjack or slot machines. The difference between poker and all those other forms of gambling is that poker is a game of skill. There is some luck involved, but the vast majority of poker is about skill. So the forces that are arrayed behind this bill are entrenched casinos that make their money from gambling, and the religious right, which wants to do anything it can to force people to adhere to their way of life at any given time.
Now, you've said that this is a small group of people who are impacting legislation for the rest of the country. A little bit of stuff to go over in that case. This bill passed by a wide margin in the House, 317-93. And in fact, I went back and looked over. Everyone assumes that it's going to pass in the Senate.
That's not the case. Very few expect it to go anywhere in the Senate.
Well, at a minimum, it was passed, or a very similar bill was passed in 2000. Now, I went and looked up a little bit about that. I'm not sure if it passed before or after the changeover in power from the Republicans to the Democrats, but it originally came up in 1999 when the House or when the Senate was definitely in Democratic control, and a number of Democratic names. It was sponsored by a Republican, John Kyle of Arizona, but some co-sponsors show up on this list: Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California. Who else is on this list? There are obviously a lot of Republicans. Trent Lott is on there and some other people. Harry Reid, the current Democratic majority leader from Nevada, sponsored this bill or co-sponsored this bill when it came up in 1999. Is this really a Republican issue? And it seems to have some significant Democratic support.
Well, yeah, the Democratic Party has the history of being the most invasive party and wanting to control our actions in various incarnations. But, you know, of late, certainly for the last 8 years or 6 years, as the case may be, and possibly the last 15 years, the Republican Party has been the party that is most interested in regulating what we do in the bedroom, what we do with our free time and being the intrusive big brother government, you know, things like monitoring our phone calls and all sorts of other incredibly un-American activities and concepts. But the Democratic Party certainly share some blame here too. There are a ton of Democrats that voted for this, and in part because they're running scared from the Republican machine. No one wants to be branded as the person that voted for child gambling or some kind of nonsense, which is exactly what's going to happen in some races when the midterm elections actually start heating up. They're going to be the Democratic Senator so-and-so is for online gambling. Those kinds of messages will be put out, and no one wanted to be the person that was seen as supporting the idea of gambling, because the Republicans are so good at manipulating that kind of information.
Now, there's one other thing I wanted to point out, and I meant to mention this before. One public interest group, which is Public Citizen, which was started by Ralph Nader and is now run by a lady named Joan Claybrook, and it's a big consumer rights organization that lobbies Congress, also supports really stringent regulation on internet gambling. So again, this is a far left organization, or what most people would call a far left organization, that also supports really tight regulation. So I guess you're saying that in some cases, certain Democrats do support that really ferocious control of what we do.
Yeah, sure. The Democratic Party has traditionally been the party of Big Brother. It's only recently when that sort of role of government has actually started to shift over to the Republican Party. There are people attracted to politics are often people that want to decide, you know, how we wear our shirts. And the issue of gambling in particular is always a divisive one, because there are people on the left and the right who think that that all gambling is bad. And that, of course, is, you know, anybody should be free to think that. It's when they try to regulate what others think that I personally get a little tense about. The issue here is that this whole concept of internet gambling needs to be regulated. Right now, all of it is being regulated by outside governments. In some cases, governments that are, you know, complete and total fascist governments, in that they are absolutely catering to the needs and passing laws that are specific for the multinationals that are doing that have set up their homes within that country.
Hopefully, and you're saying it's being controlled. You're saying it's being controlled abroad because all of these organizations, all of these gambling organizations, are abroad because they're not allowed to be in the United States.
That's absolutely the case. That is absolutely 100% of the case. I am sure that some of these poker establishments and online gambling houses would have gone to these various international it would have gone overseas to avoid taxes. Of course, that's going to happen. But at the same time, there would be companies, especially existing gambling companies, that would have been happy to set up business and do business in the United States if only the Clinton and Bush administration hadn't chased them overseas.
All right. Now, let's back down a little bit from the Republican versus Democrat or any other issues surrounding this and talk about some of the logistics here. The first question is this bill enforceable at all? I mean, you're talking about how these organizations are overseas. Congress's constitutional responsibility is to regulate interstate commerce and international commerce to the extent that it can. But how much can a law passed in the United States affect what organizations do on the other side of the world?
Well, they can't touch those other companies. They can only prevent Americans from accessing. They can do things like stopping the banks from transferring money and doing various things like that, which doesn't really do anything to stop the gambling, because there will always be ways to get money to these sites. So in effect, the only people that will truly be stopped from gambling by this bill are the sort of the same people that basically have their Monday night poker game in the first place, the true hardcore gamblers that they're really trying to protect for their own good, will always find a way to be able to get this money overseas or to the local brick and mortar casinos that would benefit from this in the first place.
You're saying if you're a gambling addict, you're going to get your kicks somehow, one way or another. You're going to figure out how to do it.
That's absolutely the case. And of course, that's the case, you know, in every kind of addictive disease that is there. I mean, I personally am actually against I loathe drug use and I loathe drug users. Well, that's probably a bit harsh, but the point is that, you know, you can't stop drug users from getting their drugs if you want to. In fact, we have ample empirical evidence that illegalizing drugs or alcohol, i.e. prohibition, only increases its use. The same thing is going to be the case here. I mean, this is a bill that panders to the right and is intended as a wedge issue. I mean, that's really all there is to it.
All right. Now, you've talked a little bit about this, but again, just to summarize, to imagine a less outrageous version of this bill tries to regulate online poker. Some of the things I can think of, and I'm curious if you have any additional thoughts on any of these. We could set age restrictions, for example. Right now we have a minimum drinking age. There is a minimum gambling age in places like Nevada where gambling is legal. Presumably, there's some way to provide information and resources for gambling addicts,
which, by the way, this bill does nothing to do. There's no treatment. There's no preventative measures. There's no funding for anything whatsoever to actually help the people that are supposedly being helped.
And the other thing that I could think of is some kind of standard banking practices to make sure that this money does not go to drug dealers or terrorist organizations. Among that list of things, are there any that you particularly object to or particularly would support?
Well, I'm not a banking expert by any stretch of imagination. I'm not a political expert. I'm only one guy with a fairly educated opinion on this subject. I'm sure that there are things that could be done to regulate how the money is being dealt with through the banking system that would keep the money from getting into terrorist hands. But of course, you know, the funny thing is the biggest sites for playing poker are owned by very large corporations and are not owned by terrorists. What they're concerned about, of course, is terrorists or drug dealers actually using the service to launder money, which has nothing to do with you or me logging on and playing a few hands of poker. So this isn't an issue about the terrorist organizations reaping profits from hosting gambling, because that's just not happening. Although, of course, they want to sort of portray that as happening, but it's just not the case. I am all for regulating this industry, because if it's regulated, people will trust it more and they'll get on and they'll play a little poker and they'll have a little bit of good time. The safer the industry, the better for all of us that actually play poker.
Now, the one other thing that we should point out here, I believe that you are an avid online poker player, so I suppose it's worth pointing that out, that you are clearly not neutral in this.
I am clearly not neutral on this. I definitely enjoy online poker.
All right, let's switch gears quickly. Any particular thoughts on Amazon and Apple working? They're both apparently working, at least according to various rumors of varying degrees of reliability, working to get movie distribution deals. First of all, do you have any reason to believe that it's going to be hard to make that happen?
Oh, I mean, you know, the real reaction to this story is, duh. I mean, of course they're working on getting movie distribution deals. So there's the only news here is that there's, you know, some somewhat specific evidence that these things are actually in the works. But of course they're in the works. Both of these, the hurdles to jump through are the hurdles that are really the same kind of hurdles that Apple's already jumped through with the music industry, and that there are companies who don't know how to deal with digital distribution that that control these properties. So really it's just a matter of getting through all the red tape and negotiating with the dinosaurs that are out there and, you know, figuring out who's going to get a piece of what. And you know, the movie industry is probably wanting an unreasonable percentage of the profits. And of course, Apple's going to be, and Amazon are both going to be wanting their own piece of the pie. So, I mean, you know, this is just going to take time to get going, but it's going to happen.
Now, I do want to ask you, when we compare the music industry and the movie industry, one of the things Steve Jobs said in his publicity blitz after the original release of the iTunes Music Store was, you know, the distribution, the range of distribution options for the movie industry is much broader. It's much more developed than for the music industry. The music industry basically sold CDs, and that was about it. You realize that the movie industry has all kinds of options. They can sell DVDs. They can rent movies. They can sell them through pay TV, and they can license them to TV networks. So there are a lot more distribution options for movies. Do the movie companies need digital distribution the same way that the music industry did?
No, but then again, the music industry only needed digital distribution because they were doing such an abysmally bad job of managing their CD distribution and managing their stable of artists, etc. The music industry, well, anyway, we don't need to get into that, but the movie industry, I think, is in many ways a lot more healthy than the music industry was, and that is in part because they're making better movies and not doing everything they can to make all the, for instance, music be as bland and as bad as possible.
Now, is it reasonable to assume that Apple and Amazon might have a little bit more difficulty reaching a deal with the movie studios because they say, hey, look, we got all these options. We're doing all right now. Our channels for distribution are okay. So we'll do this, but we're only going to do it if we like the terms a lot.
Yeah, I think that they probably look at what's happened to the music world, where Apple is the big player. Apple's controlling the gateway, and I'm sure that the movie studios want to try to avoid that. They want to maintain their own power base, which is understandable, but you know, is probably pointless. In my opinion, Apple saved the dinosaur music industry, and in some ways, I'm almost mad at them for that. But really, we can go into that another time, totally another time. There's a lot of money at stake, and you know, the interesting thing to me is that digital distribution of movies isn't going to be a really big deal until it becomes easy for you and me to buy an HD movie that we can play on our TV, and we're nowhere near on that. Just nowhere near, not in terms of bandwidth, not in terms of price, not in terms of the infrastructure to play stuff from our computer onto the TV. No, actually, I have a DVD player. I know there's a couple of products out there on this, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but I've been talking to the folks at IoData who have licensed Location Free from Sony for the Mac. And Location Free allows you basically to watch anything that's going through your cable or TiVo or whatever from any computer that's connected to the internet. Okay, that's one way of doing these things. But IoData also has a DVD player that will slurp up movies that I have on any computer in the network in my house and play those on my TV. Because quite frankly, that's where I want to watch the movies. I don't want to watch most movies on my Mac, and I don't think most people want to watch movies on their Mac. So while Apple has done front row is everything that the Windows Media Center Edition, whatever it's called, wants to be, and it does it great, but it still puts all of my digital content on my Mac. Now, I don't think that that many people want to replace their TVs with a computer in their living rooms. I think that people want TVs, and I think they want them big, and I think that they want them to be good quality. So until we can buy these movies, put them on our computer, and watch them on our TVs seamlessly and easily, we're not going to have really big movie sales. At least that's my opinion.
So we'll see what happens. It'll happen sooner or later, and it'll be a young industry when it starts, and mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes. Last thing, very quickly, music downloads up 77% so far this year. Is this a big deal? Do we care?
We care only in that it's showing that the industry is not just a fluke. People do want to buy their music on the internet because it's easier. Of course, you know, there's always going to be, not always, but for many years, there's going to be room for great local CD stores that cater to the people that want to go through and, you know, browse through CDs. But there are lots of people apparently willing to shell out their money for DRM crippled versions of music so that they can play them on their computers. And of course, that's the big difference between listening to music and watching a TV or movie, a TV show or a movie, because we actually do want to do that from our computers. So it just shows that the industry is continuing to mature, that it's solid, that Apple's business plan is a good one, that customers, you know, like that price point, and that the music industry needs to not touch the price point on songs unless they're willing to make it cheaper.
Fair enough. And hey, I thought this was going to be a slow news week, and it kind of was a slow news week, but I got to say I am glad that this bill passed, if for no other reason than you got to come over here and we got to yell and scream about gambling regulation on the internet. This was fun.
Great. So I'm definitely glad that we can have a piece of legislation that further threatens the freedoms that we have in this country, only to get me riled up.
Hey,
that's a great trade-off.
Cheers. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Ricky, and we'll talk to you soon.
If you have questions or comments about the news, or if you have a different view on online gambling, or if you have the same view and want to let us know about it, you can send me an email. Send it to roundup@macobserver.com. Let's do a quick product roundup, starting with a cute open source program that I totally dig. Hogbay Software released WriteRoom 1.0 on Thursday. WriteRoom is a word processor that is billed as a distraction-free writing environment. You can select the text color, background color, type style, and page layout. WriteRoom is free and can be downloaded at the Hogbay website. Now, let me tell you, I tried it. I went and downloaded it. It's a very simple little program. It does everything that it says that it does and nothing more, which is perfect. It's awesome. I actually really enjoyed using it. I used it to work on some writing the other day, and it is amazing how much it changes the way you write to have no distractions. So absolutely go check that out. And they have a nice policy for feature requests. It's a very community-based kind of thing. So go check that out. It's a cool little product. As for the rest of the product roundup, Intex Publishing announced the immediate availability of Collection VX on Monday. Collection VX tracks and manages information about personal collectibles like watches, stamps, coins, and dolls. It's priced at $19 US. Old Jewel Software has released iPiece, a utility that magnifies an area of the screen next to the user's mouse cursor. Pricing is $10. Lost Sock Games on Thursday issued Kokoro Quest, a puzzle game that costs $20. iPlay Music announced the immediate availability of Play Music Together on Friday. The software helps teach music skills to toddlers and preschoolers. It includes interactive guitar and song lessons, dancing lessons, and singing lessons. Play Music Together costs $40. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the staff at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the bass, as always, is by Boom for TMO. Podcast and Portable Media is coming up in that expo is coming up at the end of September. We got a link in the show notes. Go check that out. Stay subscribed, and until next week, I'll see you online.